So obviously, since I am studying environment, all the Instagram handles that I follow are related to environment and sustainability, and that's also the kind of news that I'm looking out for. I have a fair idea about the movies and documentaries that are releasing that are related to sustainability and environment. So I knew about Seaspiracy, the new Netflix documentary that everyone is talking about, or at least most people are talking about. And since its release, I was just pushing it away. I was delaying it. I couldn't get myself to watch it per se, because you know what the content is going to be. You know it is going to be heart-wrenching. And knowing that, I still want to equip myself with better facts, better knowledge. So I want to watch it, but I wasn't sure if I had the mental space for it. And so for a week, I kept saying I have my assignments, which I actually did, but it was just a way to delay it. Anyway, now that I've given the background, I finally am sitting down to watch the documentary, and I want to keep the emotions as real as possible. So I'm going to be taking breaks in this podcast episode, and I'm going to relay my feelings as and when I watch the documentary. But just before we start out, I was transported to two incidents from the past, and just thinking about how contrasting they were. The first one is from the summer of 2015, when I first went to USA and with my family. We were all in Florida, and I obviously went to Disneyland, I went to Universal Studios, and then of course the highlight was going to SeaWorld. I love the blue ocean, the sea, so I thought that was a good idea, and everything looked so beautiful, the aquariums and the exotic fish, the sea animals that you usually wouldn't think of or wouldn't see in a normal place, I got to see there. It was fantastic. But after that, there was this particular show with the whale. It's called the Shamu Show. If you've gone to the US or if you've seen this, it's called the Shamu Show. And I was thrilled to see the whale because it's the first time ever that I've seen it. But later I realized that such a huge whale, which is supposed to be in the open ocean, which is endless, is being contained in a small aquarium. I mean, it would probably take 2 minutes to swim from one end to the other end, and that is all. I mean, right now with COVID and with people being at home, you know how it feels to be confined, but think of animals in zoos and aquariums. That's been their entire life. Probably I didn't think too much about it then. I did feel bad, but I'm not going to overdramatize it and said, oh no, I cried and I was devastated. No, I didn't feel it at that time. And I came back home, it was normal. But then in 2018, when I actually went to Antarctica and we were in the open ocean, literally at the mercy of Mother Nature, which I must have said so many times, because that's not a place where someone can come and rescue you, right? And while we were in these small floating objects called zodiacs with 10 people, not even in the ship, just the small things, there were whales swimming around us just a few feet away, just a few feet. And it was mind-blowing. It was such a powerful experience to see these whales just out there in their natural habitat, swimming, and they with their calves, and you know, in twos and threes, and that was a powerful experience. And that is when, you know, one of those moments when I felt, oh my god, I think we are really messing it up. What are we doing to such powerful creatures, such beauties of Mother Nature? Why are we trying to overpower them? Why are we trying to play the superior beings? And it was just, you know, a very overwhelming experience for me. But yeah, so coming back to Seaspiracy, which is the new documentary on Netflix that I'm watching right now, and you know, the first opening scene is about these whales and dolphins which have ingested so much plastic into their tummies while they are feeding because they can't differentiate between a plastic or a jellyfish or a fish. They are not able to differentiate that. So they just consume because they take in gallons of water at a time and it all goes into the stomach. But they just don't die in the ocean, but they actually are also coming onto the beach. It's called being beached, right? Where they come off onto the land and that's where they die. So you have living proof. People are seeing it. When they cut open their stomachs, they see that there is so much plastic in them. And it is all done by us humans. I'm going to go back and watch the documentary. And obviously, like I said, I'm going to relay it and tell you my real raw feelings, experiences and understanding of the documentary. So interestingly, the protagonist also mentions about going to a sea world or a sea themed park and seeing these wild creatures being confined into little spaces and resonating with that emotion. Anyway, moving on from there, there has been mention about some countries like Japan or China or Shark Fin City, which is another name given to Hong Kong. Now, countries such as these or countries which are up in the Arctic, they are culturally dependent on seafood. And some people have pointed it out online saying that since they are used to such kind of food or since they are so heavily dependent on it, can we ask them, is it even right to ask them to cut back from the fishing industry or cut back from eating their seafood, which is so strongly linked to their culture? Now, I understand, where the cultural aspect or where the historical aspect, the geographic aspect. See, if you're living in a coastal town, obviously you're dependent on seafood. Not denying any of that and not defining or asking you to stop things that you're culturally or historically or geographically used to. But what your forefathers or what your ancestors were doing was something that was easily available to them. And that is all their limitation was, or that is all they had access to. But right now, in such a globalized world where you can get avocados from Amazon all the way in Indonesia, and there are literally no borders or boundaries, what is our excuse? And the second thing to think about is, back in the days, you'd see one little fishing boat go and they would probably catch a fish or two that was sufficient for their own consumption or just for their own village, in their own locality. That was called subsistence farming, subsistence fishing, which is just only for themselves. But what's happening right now is at a massive industrial scale. That means every time a ship goes out into the sea, there are hundreds and thousands of sea animals that are being killed and brought back to land. You know, there are these huge mechanized and horrible fishing practices. So when you know that that's the scale at which we are causing damage to the ocean and which is not sustainable, because the way that these sea creatures, the populations that are dropping and the ecosystem that is being damaged, it's almost irreparable. So do you still want to bring up the argument of being a cultural or a historic habit, right? Think about it. I'm going to go back, resume watching the documentary. So the last 45 minutes of the documentary is left and I'm just taking a moment to process what I've just heard. You know, there is so much focus on consumer plastic. You don't take a plastic straw or plastic cutlery or take away food or buy food that is wrapped in plastic. While I still stand by each and every one of those because individual action matters. Every straw you throw or every plastic spoon you use, all of that definitely matters. But the stat that I just picked up, in the ocean and in the pollution in general, just 0.03% is straws, which is still a lot. But listen to this, close to 50% of all the ocean plastic pollution is because of fishing nets and fishing gear. And why are the fishing nets in the ocean? obviously because there is fishing and they are just thrown away into the ocean. This is along with all the other animals that suffer in this entire process. And fishing pollution, the plastic that is caused by it, the deaths that are caused by it, is much, much, much more than just plastic pollution. And the solution to climate, it is protecting the ocean. So for my friends and family back in India, I don't have to tell you how hot the summers are, how unbearable it is, with temperatures touching 40 degrees, and it is just, you cannot even imagine going outside or live. And this is all happening in the last 10 or 20 years, where the temperature is slowly and rapidly increasing year by year. And in the in my present home, which is UK, of course it is very hot, but if you've seen the news in the last few years, there were heat waves in Europe, which is supposed to be a colder continent, right? It is high up, it is closer to the Arctic, it is supposed to be cool. Even the summers were supposed to be pleasant, right? But think of it, there is heat waves now. So what is happening? Earth is a blue planet. We've all studied that in school in geography, where 75% of it is covered with ocean. So throughout the last century, the 20th century, and you know, all these previous decades, the oceans were acting like a sponge. They were taking up, they were soaking all that excess heat that was emitting because of human action. Now, what happened is, the oceans are almost saturating. They cannot contain or absorb any more heat. So now, the land is feeling that heat directly. So you see where this is going. Now that oceans cannot be like, you know, a stable or a safe ecosystem, we are going to be impacted and affected a lot more. I'll give you some time to think about that, and I'm going to watch the next part of the documentary. It's 10:22 p.m. about last 20 minutes of the documentary left, and I decided to wrap up all my other work before I started watching this documentary, precisely for the reason because I know I wouldn't be able to put my mind to anything else after watching this. I'm feeling extremely nauseous just looking at all the images and all the stats and the figures, and definitely feeling helpless. I wouldn't really go into all the things that were discussed in the documentary. That's what the documentary is for. But, you know, a couple of things that, you know, that stood out for me. The fishing industry subsidy. So why is an industry given subsidy? Because they take a little bit of taxpayers' money and invest it in an industry so that the person who's consuming it or buying it would get it at a cheaper price. So the fishing industry subsidy is equal to what the United Nations need to combat world hunger. That's precisely like saying that the subsidy which is given for the fishing industry is actually causing food insecurity. So it is a conflict in itself. And you know, there are a lot of organizations which say, okay, let's consider farm fishing or fishing in a more sustainable way, but nothing could be farther from the truth. I know of the state in southeastern India, which is Andhra Pradesh, and a particular district there called the West Godavari. Now, my family comes from that district, which is known, which is also called as the food bowl of India, probably, like, you know, at least in the southern region, because it's lush green with rivers and beautiful rice paddy fields growing there. And in the last few years, whenever my father visited those places, he would come back home and tell us stories about how a lot of these farms, cultivable fresh land, was being converted to saline water and prawn and shrimp farming because that is more lucrative. But you know, the effect it is having on agriculture is real. The effect it is having on the local population is real, because converting fresh water into saline water to do industrial fishing isn't going to be very sustainable. You know, one of the things I would really like to tell is, you have to watch the documentary and quit being ignorant about it and start making those changes. I'm going to finish watching the last 20 minutes of the documentary now. You know, when Greta Thunberg, she stood in front of world leaders and questioned, "How dare you?" And people thought she was extremely emotional or why was she overreacting? But when you see footage like this about how we are destroying the planet, about how much suffering we are causing to these animals and ecosystems and wildlife, and if you're not reacting and if you're not taking any action against it, I don't know how do we even call ourselves to be human beings. I don't know what else are we fighting for if you're not able to stand up for these voiceless creatures who can't fend for themselves. I really think it's, you know, it's about time we do something about it and take action and be responsible for our actions. Well, I finished watching the documentary. I've had some time to calm down. And you know, one of the closing remarks in the documentary, Sylvia Earle, the greatest, she says, and this is something that we all know, okay, and we all practice it in our own professions, our own fields, but we are kind of skeptical of applying it to the choices we make. So Sylvia Earle, she says, probably one person can't do everything, but each one of us can do something. And if it means looking at the choices we make, the food we consume, the clothes we wear, the things that we buy, and there is clear evidence, be that environmentally, be that, you know, in terms of health benefits, in terms of being a little more considerate to the environment around us, in any which way, I think our choices matter. And I would urge everyone to, you know, equip yourself with knowledge, be it this documentary or be it any other article that you want to read or any other, you know, video that you want to watch. Just be open to the idea that maybe the knowledge or the notions that we grew up with may not still hold true. Maybe there is more out there that we don't know, or just being receptive to an other idea, a more something that is more sustainable, something that can go on forever and ever. And if it means changing the way that we live, then I really truly hope you consider it. This is me, and if you want to discuss or debate about this topic, or just tell me what you're thinking, I'm here. I'm not going to be judgmental about anything you say. I just want to have an open and honest conversation. You can reach out to me on any of my social media handles, be that Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. I am available as Prathyusha CFA18, PRATHYUSHA CFA18. And this podcast is called Prana Cafe, which is available across various platforms, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast. And if you think this podcast was worth your time, then do share a word across. Thank you so much for tuning in today.